Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined by my co-host with the most, Paul Fields, as always. And Paul, it is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Let's start off the show by giving myself a shout out, because quite frankly, I can do that from time to time. And 17 years ago today, I made my debut in the smash hit musical We Will Rock You, based on the music of Queen, here in Toronto. So I had a whole bunch of memories pop up earlier today with me in costume, and it brings me right back to how unbelievably stupid I looked in a feather boa all those years ago. But I digress. Cannot believe it's been 17 years.
Yeah, it's a long time, and that's a good place to, or you know, a great musical to debut in. It's a lot of fun. It's one that I saw. Man, it's been a couple of years since I saw it, but I know it would have been better with you a part of it. That much I know for sure.
100%. Anytime that you get to make fun of me wearing airbrushed makeup around my eyes, you know, I know you'd be all over that. But I digress. Let's talk a little news and notes before we dive into the meat of today's episode. First things first, I want to get your thoughts just quickly. It came out earlier today that the Pittsburgh Steelers are heavily interested in adding veteran quarterback Russell Wilson, who, as we know, earlier this week officially cut ties with the Denver Broncos after two very abysmal seasons, to say the least. You and I are not the biggest Russell Wilson fans on this program. We've made no bones about that. But I do think, based on the fact that they still have a young Kenny Pickett, and even though Mason Rudolph seemed to give them a spark down the stretch last year, with some of their young weapons that they have in the receiving core, as well as Freiermuth as your tight end, and TJ Watt and some of those defensive players, adding a veteran like Russell Wilson might just help them make a push in the playoffs.
I don't believe that there is a single ounce of gas left in the Russell Wilson tank. I am amazed that any team is even considering. He has done nothing but decline. He is not very good. He's not the player that we once saw. He's not a Super Bowl winning quarterback anymore. And while I think that Pittsburgh has got a good program, they have a great head coach, I just don't see what bringing in Russell Wilson will do for that team at all. He was nothing but a distraction in Denver. And even when they managed to quiet down all of the off-field garbage, the product on the field was good for, what, 6 weeks last year, maybe, at most? I just don't see what anyone sees in this player anymore. This is nothing, like, I'm not personally attacking the man. I don't know him. I don't know anything about him. But as a football player, in my opinion, it is time to walk off into the sunset. I think that just like the experiment in Denver, it will go even worse. And that's my opinion. And I don't like, not only is it good, not only are you getting the same Russell Wilson, now he's 2 years older than he was when he made the trip to Denver. So it doesn't make any sense to me, but we see it in sports all the time. If anything, for my buddies in Pittsburgh, and I have a bunch of them, let's, if they decide to go down this route, let's hope it goes better, but I just don't see that.
I completely agree with you with one caveat, and I want to get your thoughts on the caveat, and that very simply is, we've said that about recent quarterbacks, and they've been able to revive their career most recently. We saw that with Joe Flacco coming off the couch and doing what he did in Cleveland in 4 or 5 weeks and whatnot. And we also saw it when, by all accounts, all those years ago, Kurt Warner was put on the scrap heap after being a backup with the New York Giants and a couple of other teams until he revived his career with Larry Fitzgerald and the Arizona Cardinals. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to be the case here in Pittsburgh with Russell Wilson, but we have seen more than one example of reviving your career when you're thought of on the scrap heap.
I think we're talking about apples and oranges here. You know, and even with Flacco, who came in and played well for Cleveland, not what we expected. Like, he was still short-term, right? He couldn't keep up with the rigors of a full NFL season. And that's not to downplay what they did, and that was a good run. He played well, but again, it was a 5 or 6 week stretch. So are you looking to be good over the course of an entire NFL season, or are you looking to be good for 4 or 5 weeks? Also, I don't remember Flacco or Warner demanding, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, of course, Wilson's probably not going to command that anymore. Probably not the type of deal we're looking at, but like...
Plus, Denver's still paying him a shit ton of that $245 million contract that they signed him to 2 years ago, where on this very program, we were shocked at the time that he got $245 million. I can't remember how much of that is guaranteed, but it was ridiculous at the time, and it's even more ridiculous in hindsight now.
Yeah, so I don't see the comparison there. I don't see this player bouncing back. Again, I have friends who are big fans of the Steelers. So again, if this is the route they decide to go, I'm certainly not going to cheer against the guy. I am happy to be proven wrong. To me, there's no salvage case here.
Only time will tell, as we like to say here on the Isolation Series. Moving from NFL football, it was announced earlier today by Most Valuable Promotions and Jake Paul's team that Jake Paul will be fighting the legend Mike Tyson on July 20th, I believe it is, and it's going to be carried on Netflix. Now, we know that Jake Paul fought his second ever professional fight back in 2020 when Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson had that exhibition. At that time, he was on that card and everything like that. So there is some history here. You and I have talked about this on the program a few different times. I just want somebody to knock Jake Paul into next week, because I just find his arrogance a little too much, and not for me. It's for a lot of people, and you can't take anything away from what he's done business-wise for himself and different things like that, but it's not for me. Now, the argument can also be made that this is the most legit boxer that he will face outside of Tommy Fury. We know that when he faced Tommy Fury, who is an active boxer, he ended up losing. That, so far, is his only loss, really, on his professional record. Mike Tyson is 58 years old, and we saw the videos of him, punching and getting ready for the fight with Roy Jones. You don't lose your power, or your power is the last thing to go. And he looked great when he did that exhibition. He looked like he got back into as close to his fighting shape as we've seen him in a long, long time. But I don't think a 58-year-old Mike Tyson has any business going in to face Jake Paul other than the payday. And, you know, he is very much like Ric Flair in that sense at this stage in his career, where Mike Tyson will do whatever he can to get a bag of money and all the power to him. especially from where he had to come from and all his drug issues and things like that. But lots of people are going to be excited to watch this on Netflix. I am not one of them because I don't want to see him get absolutely annihilated by an arrogant guy who, once he beats Mike Tyson, if he beats Mike Tyson, will think that he's that much better of a boxer.
Well, we've talked about this before. I have zero interest in the Paul brothers boxing. And I'm a guy who loves spectacle. Like, I like when things are hyped and exciting. But, you know, I'm much more interested in what Logan Paul is doing in the WWE in a world where, you know, using that level of showmanship and that level of arrogance and all of the things that they do to promote fights is sort of part of the game. And look, I understand it's part of the boxing game as well, too. But I think you actually have to box to be part of the game. Right, like these are exhibition fights that are purely for money making purposes. And look, that's fine. I I've said this before. I'm not here to, you know, to put down what other people like. If you want to spend your hard earned money on this and watch these two guys fight, I hope it's very entertaining, and I hope you get every little bit you want out of it. I just could not care less to give either of them any time or attention. Now, I wouldn't put Tyson in the Ric Flair category. Mike Tyson at 57 or 58 years old could still probably beat up some of the best boxers around today. He's still in tremendous shape. I bet he still hits like a truck. So to me, that comparison doesn't ring true, but just the whole thought of watching these two guys fight, I'm not interested. I don't care. And I won't be tuning in.
Okay, great. Tell me how you really feel about the situation, Mr. Paul Shields. Moving on from that, another news and noteworthy thing from yesterday or last night in the world of sports that I'm interested to get your take on is it was the Gold Cup final for the women in soccer last night, Canada versus U.S. in a highly anticipated matchup. It was absolutely atrocious conditions, and it came out after the game that the coaches agreed that the rain-soaked match should have been postponed without question. It was not. What are your thoughts on the conditions, the fact that it was not stopped, and the subsequent game itself?
I don't understand why the game went forward, if we're being honest. The game was brutal. It was hard to watch. I caught mostly the highlights because it was, for me, impossible to watch. And I feel for the team, it's a crappy way to lose, particularly when you get all the way to penalties on a field like that. And I don't know. I don't have a whole lot to say about it just because I feel like this game should not have taken place. I mean, you could see them even kicking the ball. Trying to get it off the field was challenging because it was so soaked. But yeah, feel for the athletes on both sides, and particularly for the Canadians who fell short.
Right. Hopefully they can, make up for it in the not too distant future. But I completely agree with you again that based on the conditions, it shouldn't have even been a question. And the fact that the organizers and the people in charge that made that call allowed it to go forward is an absolute embarrassment for women's soccer and soccer in general. Moving on from that, I want to move to the National Hockey League. The trade deadline is just over 24 hours away now, and lots of movements took place yesterday and subsequently today. Let's start with the Florida Panthers, who inked defenseman Gustav Forsling to a maximum term 8-year extension that is worth $5.75 million per year, according to Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman. What are your thoughts on that coupling the Florida Panthers' acquisition of Vladimir Tarasenko from the Ottawa Senators late yesterday as well?
Well, I think the Forsling signings is great. I think that's a team-friendly number for a player who's pretty darn good. The Tarasenko one is a little bit of a head scratcher. I don't really know what he adds to that team, particularly a team that's playing so well and that's rolling as well as they are. Like, I mean, I guess he slots in on the first power play unit, but I don't know. He's not particularly well known for his defensive prowess. He hasn't been producing very well recently, and you know, stops in New York last season, and this year in Ottawa hasn't gone particularly well. But you know, he's a Stanley Cup winner, and he's a guy that can score goals, and we know how challenging that becomes in the playoffs. So it's hard to look down on either of those moves. But the Tarasenko one is a little bit surprising to me. The Forsling signing makes so much sense. I think that's a good player, and that's a good number.
Okay, moving on, what did you make of the acquisition of Adam Henrik from the Anaheim Ducks? I find this one to be one that can really help that team that acquired him going down the stretch into the playoffs, because I've always liked Adam Henrik's game.
Yeah, Adam Henrik is a very good player, and he provides center depth to a team to the Edmonton Oilers, who are very good right now. He creates options where you could see any number or any combination of McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Henrik down the middle. You know, obviously they're going to make some move. Like, Henrik's not a fourth line center, but if you started a lineup like that, like, how do you match up with that? That creates depth on a Oiler team that, where secondary scoring has been questioned before. Obviously, they've done a lot this season in bouncing back from a terrible start, and the nearly historic record-setting winning streak they went on. They're on another. I think they've won another five in a row at the time we're talking today. So, this is a good team that added a very good player. So I think I'm a big fan of Adam Henrik, and I wouldn't sleep on the Sam Carrick addition as well. He's a player that's really well liked by his teammates. He does a lot of the little things right, and he kills penalties, which again, for the Oilers, you to have some depth on their penalty kill and on their bottom six, it's a big that's a big trade and a big acquisition for a team that's obviously going for it, right?
Yes. And another interesting trade that took place yesterday, I want to get your thoughts on now, is Byron Burnham getting out of Colorado. I believe that this is going to be great for both teams as well, because I believe it'll give Byron Burnham an opportunity to get more of a role that he wasn't going to get necessarily playing behind Cale Makar in Colorado. What are your thoughts on both sides of that deal? Because like I said, I like it for both teams.
I love a good hockey trade, you know, like a one for one. That's fun. We don't see a whole lot of these in the salary cap era. It is a little bit interesting to me. I think Casey Mittelstadt's a great player. I think he's going to help Colorado. But Bowen Byram is a defenseman, a young defenseman who is going into a situation with a bunch of other young defensemen. Like, you're joining a situation with Owen Power, with Rasmus Dahlin, who's only 23, which is crazy because it feels like he's been in the league forever. And they have a new younger defenseman whose name escapes me, but like, they have a very young decor in Buffalo. Is Byram really going to get the chance to shine there? You know, so he goes from being second behind Makar and, you know, pick whoever else you want to pick in Colorado. But now you're not going to replace Dahlin on the top power play unit. You're certainly not going to take Owen Power's time away. So where does he slot in there? I think it's a good problem to have too many good young defensemen. I just wonder if something else is up with Buffalo, if they're looking at something maybe in the offseason for a bigger deal. But it's a lot of young defensemen they've got. And if Bowen Byram's looking for an opportunity to take more minutes or more time, I don't see that in Buffalo. But again, Buffalo, you know, they're going to miss the playoffs again this year. So I'm sure there's disappointment, and I'm sure that they are working on a plan to change that for the upcoming seasons. And this might be just one domino in that chain.
I do believe that, you know, Buffalo is doing everything they can to set themselves up for the next 4 or 5 years. I have been proven wrong with a statement like that before, but do you agree with me now based on some of those young names that you mentioned and everything like that? I understand that a lot of these are on the defensive side right now, but you add a couple more, you know, wingers in the coming months or next year or so, and this team could be very surprisingly dangerous in the next couple of years, which we haven't been able to say really since Ryan Miller, Chris Drury, and Daniel Briere were there.
I sort of disagree. We've been hearing that for the last 3 or 4 seasons that this team was ready to turn a corner, right? Dahlin's been there. Power's been there. Mittelstadt was there. They signed guys like Ryan O'Reilly and Taylor Hall, all in an effort to turn the corner. And what they haven't been able to do is sort out a goaltender. Now, Devin Levi has, you know, scuffled a little bit in his first full NHL season, which you would expect, right? Like, these things happen to young goalies. But the Sabres are in the same category as the Senators for me. They can keep acquiring all these good players, but until they start turning those good players into good seasons, then I don't trust them. I don't look ahead to the Buffalo Sabres being a threat next year until they can actually put together the fact that they're a threat. I love Dahlin. I love Owen Power. I think that they are very good players. I think Tage Thompson is an absolute beast. And I don't think that they can, I think, you know, if last year they had some of their best seasons and fell a little bit short, this year they're having some of their worst seasons and they're not going to make the playoffs again. Like, Tage Thompson's not going to be this, not going to struggle this much next year. There's just no chance. He's too good. But they are in a window now where they have to show that they can be a playoff team. They have to take a step like Detroit did this year. Right, Detroit is a team that has been working hard and putting together plans, and it looks like they're going to make the playoffs this year. That's where Buffalo needs to get to. That's where Ottawa needs to get to. And until then, it's just talk.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what happens. You're absolutely right. But they do have a couple of great pieces coming down the road if they can put it together, which is the big question mark, which is what you just said. I want to get your thoughts also on a trade that went down earlier today, just before we came on the air, and that is the Washington Capitals traded veteran defenseman Joel Edmondson to the Toronto Maple Leafs for a 2024 third-round draft pick and a 2025 fifth-rounder. Now, Joel Edmondson has had some good years. He's a 35-year-old defenseman, so to me, he doesn't really move the needle all that much. He is a need right now, just like Ilya Lyubushkin was when they acquired him from the Ducks last week. I do believe that they are that Edmondson is going to help out with the balance that they've been dealing with or in recent weeks on the defensive side of things in Toronto. But to me, I don't really think one way or another about this move done by Brendan Shanahan and Brad Treliving. Your thoughts?
I think that the Edmondson and Lyubushkin deals are for more depth, right? We see it in every playoff run. You need 6, 7, 8, you know, NHL level defensemen. You just can't. You can't go into the playoffs without it because guys get hurt. It's a more physical brand of hockey. So you need some of that grit or some of that snot, I think Brad Treliving called it at the beginning of the season. So Edmondson makes sense to me. I think why he was an attractive target for the Leafs this deadline was Montreal is retaining salary on the deal that they signed for Edmondson when they traded him to Washington. Washington is now again retaining for the Maple Leafs. So this is a double retention deal without having to get another team involved. So I think that helps. It does create an interesting issue on the left side. And I know while Edmondson has the ability to play both sides, I still think the Leafs are looking at adding right-handed shooting defensemen. So I think that with the glut of players they have on the left side, it wouldn't surprise me to see a name like TJ Brody in play if something's going on there. So it's gonna be an interesting trade deadline. I think that there's more to come. I'd be very surprised if we get through the deadline tomorrow and the Leafs haven't added another right-handed shooting defenseman.
Right. I want to also get your thoughts on something that has kind of annoyed me in the last couple of years in the NHL. We saw this a few years ago with the Tampa Bay Lightning en route to one of their Stanley Cup victories, where they had Nikita Kucherov on long-term injured reserve, which allowed them to free up some money that they wouldn't otherwise have had. And they went ahead and added a couple of pieces that helped them secure that victory in the Stanley Cup. So that is one example. And again, here yesterday or last night, we saw another example of it raise its head as Noah Hanifin ended up landing in the Vegas Golden Knights pool of players based on the fact that Mark Stone has been put on long-term injured reserve just a few weeks ago, and it freed up some money that they wouldn't have normally have had. I know that you're allowed to do it and it's not against the rules, and that's why teams do it. And if I was a GM and a president, I would do the same thing and take advantage of it if I had the opportunity to. But I'm none of those things, and I don't like it at its core.
I don't, doesn't bother me one bit. It's part of the rules. They are one of the best at exploiting those rules and taking advantage of them. I wish that my team would do that. And I mean, the Leafs do to a degree, right? With LTIR and all that stuff. They just haven't had the success that Vegas has had. I think what people need to be really careful of when they're, you know, whining and crying about the LTIR and how could they possibly be in on this guy and this and that. The having a hard cap like the NHL does leaves very little wiggle room for you know, good trades, exciting trades to happen. It's just it becomes harder and harder when you're having to deal with not simply the players you want, but the players you want plus the amount of money that they make and the you know, the maneuvering that goes along with that, right? So if you take away this LTIR, you know, loophole that teams are using, then the trade deadline becomes that much more, you know, boring. It becomes that much more sterile, and then we're spending the whole day talking about fourth liners who make less than $1 million. And we've already creeped so close to that. And that's no disrespect to any player that'll get traded during this time, but the NHL, like any league, is more exciting when big names can get traded, when big names can make big impacts at important times of the year. So good on Vegas for figuring out a way around it. I wish that every team would act like that. And I certainly wish that my teams would have more success when they act like that. But if you can get away with it and it's within the rules, I see no problem with it. Is it frustrating to see a team that's only, you know, whatever, a handful of years old winning this much and constantly pushing and pushing and pushing? Absolutely. Will their comeuppance come at some point? Will a time come when they desperately need to have, you know, picks and prospects and things like that that they haven't been able to stock during this initial run? Absolutely. They're going to run it. Like, their time will come to be a bad hockey team, but the fact that they are fighting it so aggressively and continue to try and push for a Stanley Cup every year, as much as it might drive me crazy, I respect it. And if you're doing it under the guise of the rules, then all the more power to you.
Moving back to the Toronto Maple Leafs, this time on the ice. Last night, they took on the Buffalo Sabres for the third time out of four meetings. The second time in Toronto, it was an ugly game overall. But in the end, the Toronto Maple Leafs pulled it out in overtime with Austin Matthews scoring his 54th goal of the season. Obviously, you can't have clean games or clean victories through an 82-game season. We know this, but coming off of the lackluster performance that they had against Boston, arguably on Monday, and going into the first half of a back-to-back, now, tonight, you face Boston just a couple of days removed from losing to them in that lackluster performance. What do you think? An ugly win like last night against the Buffalo Sabres in the QEW Bowl does for this team, if anything? And do you believe that they are going to come out with more jump than they had just a couple of nights ago in Toronto on Monday when they face the Boston Bruins?
No, I don't. I don't think they played particularly poorly against the Bruins the other night. I thought the Bruins were the better team. They're a smothering team. I thought you could really see the sort of lack of depth in the defensive areas. Like, you think, remember, I know Lyubushkin was here a couple of years ago, but he's had one practice since he made it to Toronto, and it's hard. It's hard to play teams as good as Boston. I think Joseph Woll didn't have a great night, so I'll be looking for him to bounce back. But I think you're going to look at another game that's tight. And if the Leafs are able to capitalize on their opportunities, right? Like, think about if that Austin Matthews goal that dances along the goal line and doesn't quite make it in, goes in the second period there, we're talking about a very different game, right? They didn't get the bounces that Boston got, and Boston worked hard for them. So I was not as down on the effort that they put in against Boston. I was glad to see them bounce back against Buffalo, and even more so glad when you find out that the team is battling the flu and there are guys who are, you know, under the weather trying to push through and you know, keep the train rolling at an important time of year where the Leafs are playing pretty well, like 14-4 since the end of January, right? This is it's a pretty darn good team. So I thought, you know, not every game can be pretty. Yes, it was ugly last night, but they looked like a team that was going through it. And they looked like a team that got 9 goals put up on against them the last time they played Buffalo. So you could see that they were giving up some offense to play good defense. And you know, their big stars scored when they needed to. Goals from Nylander and Matthews. Matthews with another game-winning goal, another overtime winner. So, yeah, it wasn't the prettiest game, but you get 2 points any way you can, particularly heading into a back-to-back against a Boston team that's really good. But as far as we talk about, as far as the effort and, you know, how they're going to come out, I expect it to be another good game, and you hope the Leafs can capitalize on the very few mistakes that Boston will make.
Do you believe that Edmondson is going to make it to Boston in time to be in the lineup tonight? I know, obviously, you can't control flights or paperwork or anything that needs to go into that, but could we see Edmondson already make that quick turnaround and be in the lineup tonight for the Maple Leafs?
Well, Washington didn't play last night. I don't think they've played since Monday or even Sunday. So as far as the travel, it probably isn't out of the question that Edmondson could make it to Boston for tonight's game. So he very well could be in the lineup, particularly if the Leafs are, if there are players under the weather, like Jake McCabe couldn't play last night. Looks like William Lagesson is going to be the name put on waivers at 2:00 here to make room for Edmondson. So it would not surprise me to see them rush the player over there. It looks like the Capitals would have been in Pittsburgh today. So, you know, the geography makes a little bit of sense, but I understand that there's a lot more that goes into these types of situations when players are being traded at the deadline. So not certain, but I would guess that he'll make it. Whether he plays or not, I'm guessing that's up to the coaching staff. And I would guess that it's up to the health of some of the guys on the team.
As I said earlier, we're just over 24 hours away from the official deadline now. What do you anticipate between now and the deadline tomorrow? Do you anticipate any other big names to come off of the trade bait board? Or are you anticipating that most of the big moves have been made in the last 3 or 4 days, and we will have a generally quiet deadline with the occasional fourth liner, third liner moving, like you said earlier?
I think there's still some, like, I think Gensel's a name that's still out there that I think you'll see a lot of conversation around. I think Colton Parayko is getting a lot of buzz as the defense market starts to thin. I think David Savard, from Montreal, I think, is another right-handed defenseman who the conversations are going to pick up.
Denny Savard would be very entertaining at this point. Yeah. But yes, yeah.
I don't think he's a right-handed shooting defenseman, but I'm sure someone can correct me. But I do think that there's still some movement in that high end. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Senators do something, you know, maybe off the board, right? They've had a really disappointing year, and now they have a ownership and management group in there who is determined to turn this thing around with some pace. So there might be players on that roster whose value won't be higher in the summer, who might have their highest value now. So there might be some surprising names out of Ottawa. And I think that there's always one or two trades that sort of catch you off guard. So I would keep an eye open for that. As far as the Maple Leafs go, I think we're going to see another right-handed defender, whether that's probably maybe a little bit more of a needle mover than someone like Lyubushkin. Although I'm a big fan of Lyubushkin, I'm glad they brought him back. I do think that he is, you know, a 6'7" D on a good squad. So they're probably going to look into that. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see some players like a Nick Robertson in play or TJ Brody in play. Would not surprise me to see the Leafs go after a penalty killing type forward, a depth forward, because, you know, they're penalty killing after Kampf, Marner and Yarncroke. The penalty kill gets a little bit thin. I think that really speaks to why they brought in a guy like Edmondson. He's known for his good penalty killing, and he's known for being a good shot blocker. So wouldn't surprise me to see if they brought in a forward to solidify that as well.
Okay, two questions for you then. Number one, what do you think is going to happen with a gentleman that's name has been bandied about quite a lot here in the last 10 days or so, and that is Elias Lindholm. We know that, as I said, he was recently acquired, but there's been a lot of talk about him getting flipped to one team or another. Do you think that he is going to ultimately get flipped? And then subsequently, do you think that we're going to see anything of great substance happen in the goaltending market for any team, not just potentially the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I don't think the Leafs are doing anything in goal. I think that they've kept Jones for a reason, because I think that they don't think he's going to make it through waivers. So it's been a very shrewd move to keep him around while Joseph Woll finds his game back after a high ankle sprain, because we know how hard it can be. But I think the Leafs are very comfortable going into the playoffs with a combination of Samsonov, Woll, and Jones. I think that's got them through the season. Samsonov has been excellent since he returned from his troubles at the beginning of the year, and Woll looks like he's on his way back. So I don't see the Leafs in the goaltending market at all. As far as the goaltending market in general, unless something has changed with Markstrom in Calgary, unless he really is, you know, unhappy with the way that the management is handling this retool, rebuild, etc., then I don't see him moving, and he would probably be the biggest name that's been rumored to be on the move. But a guy like Saros, he's completely off the radar now, because Nashville's been so good, 8-2 or whatever in their last 10. They're playing incredible. So yeah.
It just took them to get grounded from going to see U2 at the Sphere.
Oh, so stupid.
Yes.
That is stupid. We can argue about that another time, but that was what a stupid decision made by Barry Trotz. But I digress. I think if we see goalies move, we'll see Jake Allen move. We'll see maybe a Kaapo Kähkönen from San Jose move.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
He's been like, Minnesota said that they're not trading him. And I understand that, you know, GMs lie. We know that, particularly around the deadline. But Minnesota has been long holding this delusionary belief that they're going to make the playoffs this year. And I just don't see that. But I mean, you never know, right? These things can happen. But yeah, I think we're going to see like maybe the Elvis Merzlikins of the world. You know, I think the Colorado Avalanche would love to do something about their backup situation. I think that Georgiev has played well, but they don't really have a solid backup. They have a young backup as of right now with Pavel Francouz hurt. So, yeah, I think we'll get a little bit of movement there. And in general, I think it's always an exciting day. There's always lots of movement. It just depends on where that movement, if it's high end players or that mid range to low end player. I think there's still a couple big names out there. I think Jake Guentzel is a big name. I think we might see something with Jacob Chychrun. Sean Walker, Tarasenko, guys like that are off the board. But players like Vetrano and Dumba, you know, Pavel Buchnevich, Tyler Toffoli, there are still players of value who can really help any team in the playoffs kicking around. So I would expect some big movements between now and basically, yeah, we're less than 25 hours away from the deadline tomorrow at 3. So I think we're going to have a busy, busy day here.
Yeah, and speaking of Matt Dumba, do you believe that Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan will have enough to go out there and acquire somebody like Matt Dumba? Because we keep hearing his name linked to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Dumba's a player that I wouldn't mind having. I think what you'll see is the Leafs targeting more of a player like Colton Parayko. A little bit different. Parayko has a full no trade clause, so he would have say on where he goes. But if he'd be willing to waive to come to a place like to come to Toronto, then I think that's more likely the direction they'll go in. But Dumba's intriguing, and he has really, like, his game has evolved. While he still has some offensive flair, he's become a much better defensive player over his career. And at this point in his career, I would say that while he's not a huge shutdown player, he's not a defensive liability at all. So that's a player that I think would be very interesting. But for me, and just from what we're seeing out of Brad Treliving, I would say that he's going to look at players like David Savard and players like Colton Parayko first, before going after a player like Dumba.
Okay, and circling back with the other individual that I wanted to get your thoughts on, any thoughts on Elias Lindholm's
here? Oh, yes, Elias. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think Vancouver would make that trade or make a trade with him if it meant that they thought they were going to get significantly better. I don't know that, Jake Guentzel might have been the right piece to flip Lindholm somewhere else. But if you can't get Guentzel, I don't see another player that's that level of a difference maker. I'm a big fan of Lindholm. I think that he'll settle in nicely in Vancouver. But I think that what it shows me more than anything is that Vancouver knows that this team has caught something special this year, and they are willing to do whatever it takes to try and push this as far into the playoffs as possible. I don't see Lindholm going, but if they're still in the conversation for Guentzel, then that player might be enough to make a move like that, which would be pretty dramatic, right? Considering they only acquired him whatever month or 6 weeks ago, it would be a pretty big deal to flip that player. It doesn't happen a whole lot. So, and again, this is the time of year where people making predictions on this stuff are made to look real silly real quick. So, you know, by the time I edit this and upload it, we could be wrong, but I think Lindholm stays in Vancouver.
Okay. And then last but certainly not least on the hockey front today on this Thursday, March 7th, 2024, just want to get your thoughts briefly on something that happened recently, and that is the dismissal of Lindy Ruff after just about 4 seasons at the helm of the New Jersey Devils. And former player and former Vancouver Canuck head coach Travis Green, I was going to call him Trent Green, but he's not a football player. Travis Green has taken over at least for the rest of the season. We know that there are a lot of really good players in New Jersey currently at the moment, so it's been a very disappointing season for them thus far, hence why they made the move of getting rid of the veteran Lindy Ruff. Your thoughts on Lindy Ruff's dismissal and Travis Green taking over on an interim basis, at least for right now?
Yeah, I'm not shocked simply because of the way the New Jersey season went. But I did think that Lindy might get another season out of it because of all the injuries. You know, like they have been missing Jack Hughes for much of the year. Dougie Hamilton's been out with a major injury. They've really been running uphill for most of the season. But obviously they felt like they needed to do something, needed to get a different voice in there. Obviously. I think Travis Green's a really good coach. So I'm not surprised to see him step in there, and probably good for him to get back behind an NHL bench as a head coach again. But I was a little surprised to see Lindy get the axe, particularly at this point in the season, right? Like, I feel like they're late into the year. You'd think that they would have let Lindy and this team see if they could capture some of that magic and go on a run. Because look, I don't think that Philadelphia is uncatchable in the Metro. I think that they are looking like that's a team that they just traded away Sean Walker, who's a good player. You know, that puts a little bit of a strain on their depth. Their goaltending depth took a hit with Carter Hart, you know, being one of the players that was left their teams with the whole issue with the Hockey Canada 2018 World Junior scandal. So Philadelphia is a team that is losing depth and hasn't been playing particularly well, even though they've been on an incredible run. And I'm not calling them fake by any stretch. I think Tortorella has done a nice job and they've worked hard to be where they are. But if there's a team that could be caught in the Eastern Conference, I think it might be them. So I thought Lindy would at least have the runway of the end of the year. Turns out they made a different decision. We'll see if it sparks New Jersey moving forward. But a tough break. I like Lindy Ruff, you know, even memorable rants directed towards the Maple Leafs aside. Lindy Ruff is a coach that I always have time for.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of who was the coach just a couple of years ago that got dismissed and he had to get his own taxi cab.
Oh, Gerard Gallant, I believe.
Yeah, so yeah. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit because Gerard Gallant was doing very well up until that point, and then they got rid of him for whatever reason, I can't remember. And they couldn't even get him a car. He had to get his own taxi. So that's sort of the same vibes I got. I know it's different situations, but I like both Lindy Ruff and Gerard Gallant. Plus, I love the fact that Gerard Gallant and his smile remind me very similarly of Roman Reigns' smile since he came back and spent all that money on the veneers that he's had. You know, it's calmed down now since he first came back. But when he first came back, man, were those things bright.
See, folks, that's why you have to listen to the Isolation series. Nowhere else in the world will you hear comparisons between Gerard Gallant and the tribal chief Roman Reigns. So stick around for some for other ridiculous comparisons that we will definitely made.
But is there anything else on today's edition of the show that we haven't talked about that we should talk about, my friends?
No, I think looking forward to a fun weekend. Leafs and Bruins tonight. Leafs Habs on Saturday. Trade deadline tomorrow. Good time to be a hockey fan. Once the trade deadline comes and goes, the focus all switches to the playoffs. So I love this time of year. I'll be stapled to, you know, one of the sports channels here in Canada for most of the day tomorrow while I do my work, because I love seeing all the trades that happen. So looking forward to that big time.
Absolutely, me too. Couldn't have said it better myself. Fantastic show on this Thursday, March 7th, 2024, for Paul Shields. I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series. And as always, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so. And we would like to send a big thank you, as always, as well, to our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. Until we come at you again with another fantastic episode, have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the trade deadline for the next 24 hours or so. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.